Good evening, everyone. This is John Adolfi, and welcome to another monthly event here at Adolfi Real Estate. Tonight, it is, June 16th. It's 7 p.m. We got a crowd of people here. We got people here from Rome, New York that have traveled out. We've got two gals here from Brooklyn, New York that have traveled out. Anybody else travel more than 10 miles to get here? 15, 20, 25? Okay. Martha, where are you from?
Liverpool?
All right. What's that?
Clay?
All right. And Clara, you're from?
Syracuse.
Okay.
If I want to make it bigger, I'm from Columbia.
You're from Columbia. All the way from Columbia. Here's Claire. All right. So tonight we're going to talk about the 17 ways to finance your property. And you know, every time inevitably when we have... Hello, Colleen. How are you? Good to see you. Welcome. No, that's fine. We're going to talk about the 17 ways to finance your property. When I ever take a poll with people and ask them what's the stumbling blocks that people have, especially the newbies and the wannabes, and I say that with respect, though, okay? You know, the enthusiasts that want to get into the game, this is the number one blocker, is the financing. So what do they do? Well, they sit on the sidelines for a very long time. Nothing usually changes financially in their life, so they usually get discouraged and get out of the idea of selling real estate. Here's another thing that makes me sick to my stomach. They go to these seminars that are usually anywhere between free to $100. They hear stuff for 3 days, and then they say, we'll sell you a coaching package for $10,000, $20,000, $30,000. Let me tell you what the psychology is behind that. It's called, if they're giving away this amount of information for $100, what are they going to give away for $30,000? And usually, I counseled with a young, a little bit older than younger couple, desperation in the woman's eyes, tears of how I've always wanted to be successful, and I couldn't find it. And this was my last chance. And they took whatever little money that they had, and they already did the $10,000 package, and they were getting ready to do the $35,000 package, where somebody would come for 3 days and follow them around and show them how to do real estate investing. All because they don't have the money. Also, we're going to throw in a bonus for you, they say. You come to our seminar, we'll introduce you to angel investors that just can't wait to hand you their money. Are you kidding? I don't know. I've never gone behind the curtain, so I can't tell you from experience what that's all about. Maybe some of you here or listening do. But it's just a shame. But let me tell you about Gary Parker. Gary's a gentleman that has done very well for himself in this industry of real estate. He owns tens, and I won't go into the details, but he owns quite a bit of property. And I was going to have him speak at our seminar. And he was going to do the bologna sandwich story. And the bologna sandwich story goes like this. Gary ate bologna sandwiches for 2 years to save up enough money to go to an auction that nobody attended but him. And you can probably guess what happened next. He got the house for absolutely next to nothing. But then Gary proceeded to go and eat bologna sandwiches for another 2 years and then got his second property. And now he's got more properties than he cares to admit that he owns. And but how did he do it? He did it the old-fashioned way. When I asked him to come and speak, please understand, he said, John, it would be unrealistic for me to come and speak to your group. I said, why? He said, because... see, I had inbred in me a certain way of thinking and an emotional response to money that most people don't. I said, what do you mean? He says, where some people have the feeling of joy and happiness when they spend a dollar on something that they want, I feel the same joy and happiness when I save a dollar. I went, oh. But that being said, let me just say this. The person who is this wanting to buy a house, who may not be a Gary Parker, okay, still hasn't been shown, or at least given the opportunity to try to step it up just a little bit more in the area of savings, to be a little bit more deliberate and systematic about, say, And let me ask you this. How many people have read the book The Richest Man in Babylon? 10%. 10%. You force yourself to live on 90%. 10%. You set it aside. You set it aside. Your purse starts to grow with the gold. And then your gold goes and buys a property, and the property produces the children of the gold, which is going to be silver or copper coins. And then it continues on through exponential growth. So tonight we're going to talk about the 17 ways to finance your property. I do know that when I've shared with this before, there was one gentleman who unfortunately is not here tonight. Maybe he'll come before this is over with. Which number 17, I was going to let him speak on it. And I'll share with you in detail what happened in his life. Changed his life, changed his real estate experience entirely. And that's number 17. So you can't get up and walk out unless you want to miss number 17. All right. That being said, number one. Cash. Duh, right? Yeah, but you got to understand, cash is what?
King.
Cash is king. Cash is king. When you have cash, you have opportunity that many people don't. Carmela's over there nodding her head saying, absolutely. What happens when you go to, I'm going to use this as an example, okay? But what happens when you go to let's say a garage sale, and you've got $7,000 cash in your pocket, and all of a sudden somebody says something, and guess what? You have the opportunity and you have the means. You know, in The Richest Man of Babylon, I was reading this morning about, they were talking about luck. And they're saying, okay, does luck exist? He says, well, define luck. Are you talking about the luck that you do when you go to the gambling casino? Where, you know, the chances of winning is always on the house's side. Is that what you mean by being able to excel in life by luck? And they all kind of realize, how many people here actually got ahead with this kind of luck? And everybody kind of looked around. Not only did they have lean purses, and that's what they coined phrase that they didn't have much money, but none of them did. None of them was able to win at the casino, you know. He says, well, maybe luck is a little, should be defined a different way. How about luck being defined as the person who works hard and does not procrastinate when an opportunity arises? Now, your opportunity, or, I'm sorry, your ability, let's say you're not a procrastinator, okay? Your ability to catalyze an opportunity is really dependent, in part, on whether or not you got the cash or the means. You don't even have to raise your hand, but how many have had to pass up and up on an opportunity because they didn't have the cash? And I'll raise my hand. Okay. Cash is king. So, what are you going to do? Are you going to start saving as of today? Are you going to start putting 10% aside and you're going to see it grow? True confession. Okay? True confession. Our business has been doing very, very well over the last 5 years especially. It's been growing every single year since Mr. Delemy, the gentleman who I gave you the CD, came into my life and basically became my business coach. And every year, I should turn this off, but I'm going to leave it on, because this may help somebody. Every year as we progressed, we went 10 to 20% increase every year, okay, in gross income. At the end of the year, I said, I'm working hard, honey, and we don't have anything left. What's the problem? And what I found out was, and we have some credit card debt, coaching fees and things, you know, for the business and everything. And I said, I don't like this. I don't like this at all. So I hit the books. I reread a book that I hadn't read in years called The Millionaire Next Door. Anybody read it? Okay. When you get to your enough is enough line, if you're sad about the fact that you don't have any money at the end of the year, reread the book. It'll explain some things. And then, of course, I picked up the book, The Richest Man in Babylon, because I said, okay, I'm ready to read this again. I started reading it, and it all came clear to me. What came clear to me was that I'm spending it all. And I don't even know where I'm spending it. There's a law called Parkinson's Law, which means that no matter how much you make, you will spend it. And in The Richest Man of Babylon, it says that the reason why you spend it is because you have more desire than you have money. And it's just, it's innate within mankind. It's just innate within us. And it's a natural law, apparently, that just takes place. So what I learned, and I'm going to when I'm talking about the credit cards, I wanted to attack the credit cards more forcefully. So this is what we did. Every dollar that the office brought in, I took and put 10% aside. Now, I tithe. I'm a Christian. I go to church and I do tithe. So we've always been doing that. I said, well, honey, we're going to have to step it up. We're going to have to. And then what another, my other coach, a financial coach, said to me, John, what you want to do is you want to put 10% aside for credit card debt reduction. I said, okay. And he said, then force yourself to live the office, whatever, on the 90 cents, on the dollar. And I went, okay. So we did this about 1.5 or 2 months ago. 2 months ago. And we eliminated a $5,000 credit card almost overnight. Almost overnight. And do you know what kind of feeling it gets when you do that? But if I had not done this principle, this is what I guess I'm getting at. If I had not stepped forward, first off, I got to my enough is enough line. Second thing I said, I recognized what the problem was. Third thing is I started to seek counsel. Book, person. Then I got a plan, and then I acted on it. And as a result of acting on it, we eliminated one credit card almost, you know, within a month, month and a half's time. And it feels fantastic. And it also feels, can I tell you another feeling it feels? If I feel protected, more so than ever before, because I know that there's now a forward movement that I didn't have before. All right. So I got a little personal about my finances, but I hope in the process it'll inspire and encourage people. So cash is the number one way of buying a house. What more can be said about cash? Well, one of the advantages of cash is that you can beat other people out. They come in with a 3.5% FHA loan with a home inspection, and you come in there, cash, 30-day closing, no home inspection. Who wins? Okay. Who wins? So cash. Cash can help you win in situations. It can also help you to buy the Home Path properties, which is the Fannie Mae foreclosures, the HUD homes, the bank foreclosures, the REOs. Much easier. Because if you go and get financing, then the house has got to meet a certain standard of, I'm talking about this, the house's condition, and you run into problems. Run into problems because it may not be up to snuff. They may not be able to turn the water on. There may be a break in the line. And your bank is saying, I'm sorry, but that line has to be, the appraiser has to see everything working. Oh, I'm sorry, we can't. Well, then you don't get the loan. Okay. Cash is king. All right, let's go move on. Borrow from a family or a family member or a friend. There's a gentleman. I can't remember his name. He's down in West Palm Beach. He takes houses and he creates all sorts of cool gadgets and remodels the house and sells it for $30 million. And he's got blonde hair and he looks like David Lee Roth from Van Halen. And the guy's like a rebel, and he's really, really cool. And if I think of his name before this is over with, that's what he does. And in his book, he said, before you go and borrow, before you go into some of the other venues we're going to talk about, he says, go borrow from family and friends. He says, get some skin in the game of your own and go ahead and borrow before you go and borrow at a bank. And I'm like going, really? Because you know how that can complicate things. But he recommends it. He recommends that. And I don't know, there's probably a little bit more involved in that I'm not even thinking of here. Maybe the accountability. You're my brother, let's just say, and I borrow $100 from you. Either I'm going to really try to get that money back to you, or I may take advantage of the fact that you're family and you'll be the last one to get paid. So that can go either way.
If you have integrity, you'll do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back an envelope with a little piece for them.
Yeah.
Makes you feel good.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So borrow from a family or friend. Hard money private lender. Hard money is a 12 to typically 16%. I'm not saying it can't go more than that, but it's typically a 12 to 16% interest rate. And it's called hard money lending. Some would consider it loan sharking. I don't know. I mean, 16% is a lot of money. I'll tell you something, though. Years ago, maybe 10, 15 years ago, I remember HFC, was it? HFC, Home Finance Corp or whatever, and Beneficial. I remember people were paying 16% when everybody else was paying 6% because they were running into problems and they were consolidating. Next thing you know, they got a 16% loan on their house. Ow. It's bad enough you got a credit card that's 16%, but a home, a loan on a house? So hard money private lenders. You know, truthfully, I've not really dealt a whole lot with the hard money lenders. But they're out there. I can't tell you where to go and find them. I'm just saying that they're out there, and that is one way of doing it. Now, the idea behind the 12 to 16% is this. You're not getting a 12 to 16% loan to hold on to it, even if they let you, for 5, 6, 8, 10 years. It's the idea of being able to get in and out, 6 months to a year, and usually that's when they want their money. You know? And there's a whole different bunch of ways of structuring that. Sometimes they collect the interest rate up front. Sometimes they interest only. There's a number of ways of doing that. Cash in your stocks. I don't know if anybody have done doing the stock market. I guess stock market's been doing good for the last couple of years, but I don't really know. I don't really do the stock market, but you know, at some point, cash in your stocks. You know the book, the game by Kiyosaki, the cash flow game. Have you ever seen that before? Anybody ever play it? I have. Okay, you sell things and buy things, and you make money with stock, and then you buy properties, and then you get out of the rat race, and there's this other, anyway. One of the things that you'll notice from that game is that where you make your most money the quickest is the stock market. And then the idea is, though, is you make your money and get in and get out, and then take that money and then buy property with it and start leveraging. You know, start leveraging your, so you're starting to get income coming in. So cashing your stocks is another way of funding your real estate venture. Take on a money person as a partner. You know, I'll tell you something. Many a time I have seen a young person or somebody new to this who's gone to one of these seminars who then goes, well, I don't have money, so I'm going to find a money person. And they think they find a money person. And then they think that they're going to run around in bird dog and they're going to make money by partnering somehow with this individual. And somehow this individual is going to give them the money to go and invest in a property. All they can do is got to find it and identify it. I know. Camilla's over there shaking her head, and it's true. First off, if you don't have the money, let me just say this. If you don't have the money and you're looking to impress somebody who has money that's not related to you, you better either surround yourself with excellent, excellent people, and then you better get good yourself at something. Whether that be construction or marketing or real estate in general. I mean, you've got to bring a marketable skill to it. Otherwise, you're just a wild man or woman running around, you know, just excited and stuff because you went to the seminar and you're expecting people to take you seriously. People with money, people with any sense of, and a lot of them do have a sense of whatever, the way the world works, they'll look right through you unless they know that you bring something to the table. And maybe what you bring to the table, part of it is 100% transparency and honesty and integrity. Trustworthiness. That's something you can't buy. You cannot buy that. Perhaps it starts with that, and then it continues on with something else. Okay? Maybe it's his $100,000, but it's your $20,000. That shows some initiative, and it says, I can't bring it all, but I'm going to put what I've got into it, as opposed to, I got no money. So take on a money person as a partner. How do you find a money person? I don't have any solutions for you. I'm just wondering, has anybody ever tried to find a money partner? Or ever find a money person?
Just advertise.
Huh? Advertise?
In the paper.
Okay. Swinda's over there going, ooh. Who's that?
At
NBC. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Now I know, wait a minute. This is my understanding. SEC will call you if you're trying to lend money to an individual who's going to buy a house. But when it's between two investors, that's not so much something SEC is interested in. That's my understanding. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm happy to learn.
I think from what I've read, I think it depends on if they're a accredited investor.
Okay.
If they're not, then it might cause some problems. And accredited means they have a lot of money or a lot of experience.
Oh, yeah. Credited investor. I remember in Kiyosaki's book, he talked about that. If somebody has a net worth or something of $1 million or made so much money for 2 years in a row at $300,000 or something like that. Okay, got it. Just be careful. That's all. Cash in your bonds. I don't know how many people have bonds, but you can cash in your bonds. And I'm just trying to stimulate some thinking here. What can you cash in? Do you got a whole fistful of gold and silver that's laying around doing nothing? Gold's about 1,100 and some change per ounce. And silver's at, I don't know, what's silver at? 16? 14? 15? You know. The reason why I pointed over to Martha is because she's got a nice silver dollar around her. I'm sorry, I don't want to endanger you. It's only silver, guys. So cash in your bonds, cash in your gold. I don't even think I got gold in there. Gold is another way of doing it, you know? What do you? I didn't even put this one on there. What do you got to sell? You know, do you got a 1970 Torino in perfect condition? You know, it might appreciate through the years some more. But you can't leverage a Torino. Sell the Torino. Go do your real estate vision. You know, your goal, your why in life. You know, go do it. Torino's not doing you any good. Owner financing. Did you know, you all know what the multiple listing service is? You know, it's that cooperative effort between all of us 1,600 realtors in the Syracuse and surrounding area where we put all of our listings into one database and we follow certain code of ethics and rules and whatnot. Okay. I'll give you a little bonus tip. And you may want to write this down. If you are interested in knowing about all owner financing opportunities that are in the MLS for a certain demographic, John, I want everything in clay that is a two-family with owner financing. Well, you won't probably get anything because there's hardly any two families in clay to begin with. But if you wanted that demographic, I can create that demographic for you. If you want all 3 and 4 family houses on the north side with owner financing, I can create that demographic for you. Okay? Now, how you can do that otherwise is this. Hey, John, I just saw 3 properties on the north side. Call the agency if any of them will do owner financing. It takes a little bit more legwork, but I can do that too. I'm doing that for a young gal in Long Island. She invests in this area, and she's, matter of fact, we're doing it for 3 of them right now. Just investigating. We're not going forward with anything just yet. So that's another idea for you. Owner financing. Let's talk about owner financing. Owner financing is when an owner has the ability to hold the mortgage. Basically, they may want $10,000 down. They may want $50,000 down. They may want to charge 5%. They may want to charge 8%. Somewhere in there is usually where you find that for commercial and residential. 5 to 8% for. And where people seem to a good rate for commercial or residential owner financing is around 5 to 6%, and 7 to 8% on the higher end. Okay, is what I've seen. And you can structure it in a number of ways. You can do what they call a balloon payment after 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And all that means is that you pay on it like a 20-year mortgage at $500 a month. But after the 5th year, you both agree that whatever the balance is, you're going to pay in cash for that balance that's left over, which means that you're going to need to either save up that money or you need to get a mortgage at that point. Okay, so be careful when you enter into a balloon agreement or add a balloon payment into an owner financing deal that you can do it. So that's one way of owner financing. We have a whole seminar on owner financing. You know, the land contract, rent to own or the lease option. The owner will hold with the deed transferring or title transferring. So, you know, there's a number of ways of doing that. Lease option. This is where I'm going to get a little bit angry. I don't typically get angry, but something happened today. And I'm going to name names because I don't like it. We took on 2 listings. A gal contacted us via email and said, we would like you to list 2 listings. One was on Route 31 in Sullivan. The other one is at 99 Cherry Street in Phoenix. I'm not going to say who the owner is. Because I've never met the owner, haven't even talked to the owner. But this liaison who contacted us wanted us to list the properties. I did. Okay? there were signs in the window, and I didn't know that the sign was in the window when my wife went out and put our sign, but it basically said rent to own, $2,000 down, $900 a month. And so I'm getting phone calls from people asking about this rent to own possibility. Started yesterday. I got two more today. I contacted the woman, the liaison, and I said, is this something that your person's willing to do now that it's listed with me? Are you looking to do that? Oh, she says yes, and we'll pay X amount of dollars for a referral fee. So I'm sitting there thinking, I'm good with that. And I said, okay. I said, what are the terms or the price of the house with this? Sometimes you want to jack up the price of the house when you do lease to own a little bit. The house was listed for $57,900. It may not even be worth $57,900 because of the condition it's in. But as a starting point, I said, yeah, sure, whatever. We'll get it started. They wanted $115,000. Now, $2,000 down, $1,100 a month.
So they had no intention of really selling it because nobody could...
Yeah, no. They do. You know, listen to this. I email her back and I said, listen, I said, that's a little bit out there. I said, I can't associate myself with something that is unfair. I said, I just can't do that because I want to be fair to these people and they want a fair deal. And that isn't fair. She writes back, she says, well, it was in your paperwork that we were going to do a lease, but she didn't say what the price was. So I wrote her back and I said, look, I said, I'm taking it out of the multiple listing tomorrow. Because she gave me that option, of course. I said, I'm taking them both out of the multiple listing tomorrow. And I said, this reeks of being unethical. And at the very most, embarrassing. And I went a little bit further, and anyone who's associated with it. And she hasn't rebutted, like, took offense to what I said, but I will not embarrass myself, nor will I look unethical or act any way that looks like that. Is it unethical to do $115,000 on that property? Is it unethical? It's not unethical to do that. You got to find somebody who's willing to do that. Here's the problem. She said he's been doing it successfully for 7 years. People with red flags in their credit history. Do you know how desperate some people can get sometimes when they want to own their own home and there's an opportunity for it? People can get a little bit crazy when they have an emotion that says, I want something, and then somebody makes a way no matter how wacky it is. People will do it. I don't like that at all. I don't like it at all. And those of you who are listening to this, normally I would never share that kind of information, the addresses. But the reason why I'm doing this is because I'm so incensed with what they're doing and then them acting as if this is a good thing. I got back to all three of those people with almost an apologetic tone in my voice as I shared with them the price point and explained to them how I had just discovered this. Then I went on to see what I could do to help them with their credit. Gary.
So, probably a simple question, but what's the whole idea of these acting? They pay $1,000 a month, and you add that up over the months and over the years. If it raises to what they want for the price of the house they own it, is that basically it?
Yeah, and they pay. First off, they're paying twice, 100% more than what they're asking, and it's not even worth that. And then on top of that, I have no idea what that payment actually is. How much of that goes towards the purchase price? Usually with a lease option, you know, you pay so much down to secure the option so you can tie up the house for 1 or 2 years. And then sometimes if you pay like $1,000 a month, they'll knock off $100 a month, something like that, for 2 years. And then you get your financing. And usually it's for that stopgap for people that went through a divorce or they know their credit can be good again or they're in the process of repairing. It's going to take about a year or so to repair. And then they want to buy a house versus rent. Anyway, lease option. So you could lease option a house if you wanted to. Just don't get into something that crazy. That's nuts. Borrow from an annuity. Nobody talks about annuities. I'm not even sure what an annuity is, but if you have one, you can borrow from it, I guess. Again, I don't need to be the expert in every single nook and cranny. This is the idea, is to stimulate some thinking on your end and start thinking, what resources do I have? That's what I really ultimately want you to ask yourself. What resources do I have? Borrow from a 401k or a 457 retirement account. Come on, it's just sitting there doing... What, 6%? Is that what it's doing? I don't know. Borrow from the 401k. There is no other way on this planet that you can make money work harder than in real estate. You know? There's just no other way. Unless somehow you get a right stock pick and it just... But that's gambling. It's like gambling. You know, that's the problem. It doesn't have to be. You can do it very intelligently. You know, conservatively like Warren Buffett does. But, you know... Do you know there's websites that show what Warren Buffett does? How many shares of stock he has, what it's worth, and when he makes a trade? I'm talking in a big trade, so not like, you know.
No.
And I believe his stock portfolio, I believe it's at just over $100 billion. Just the stocks. Don't you love it? Okay. Bank financing. As an investor, you've got a problem. Banks want 20 to 25% down plus closing costs. Let me give you an example. I like this house on the north side for $50,000. Great. I'm going to go to the bank. I'm going to go to Seneca Federal Salve Bank, and I'm going to get a loan with, let's just say, 25% down. Great. So, you got to come up with $12,500 just for the down payment. Then you got to have a whole year's taxes, and let's just say they're $3,500. So now you're up to $16,000 that you have to come out of pocket. Let's say it's $1,000 close to it for your insurance, okay? Because you're not going to be living there, and let's say it's a two-family. So you got $1,000 there. What are we up to? 17? All right. Bank's closing cost is going to be $2,000. Okay. So where are we at? 19? 19,000, and then your attorney. Is that 350 or is that 650? Take your choice. So, you know, you're almost at $20,000 out of pocket to buy a $50,000 house. Granted, your mortgage would be then at 37.5, okay? The 50,000 minus the 25% down. But still, it's a lot of money. Bank financing. Now, if you do bank financing, you better make sure that the house that you're buying is from somebody who can scrape and paint if the surface is needing it, because you buy a government-owned home, they're not going to be scraping and painting nothing, and there you're in your same situation again. Can't move forward. I know with conventional financing, there's a little more forgiveness in the property's condition. But beware, if there's a problem with the property, it's your problem, not anybody else's. And you can lose money doing this. Not just necessarily the deposit, which could happen, but also the money that preliminary to it. Are you going to do a home inspection? That's $375 right out the door. You know, did you hire an attorney? Probably they won't charge you if it falls apart because they didn't do a whole lot. What about the bank application, the appraisal? You know, that's $350, $400. Could be another $400 or $500. Okay? Typically, people don't do this. The 20 to 25% down. At least not in my sphere of yeah.
What about the loans where you borrow to fix it up and then it changes in 203K?
The FHA 203K maybe?
Yeah,
the FHA 203K did away with investor financing for the 203K and for FHA about 20 years ago. So you can't get a rehab loan component with FHA for someone who's not going to live in it. Only if you're going to live in it. And it's a little bit difficult, but I'm not going to say it's impossible to be able to find a conventional product with a fix-up component. Look for it if you need to. Okay? They may be out there. Cash out the equity and refinance a primary residence. You're living in a house that's worth $150,000. You got zero mortgage on it. Or let's say you got $30,000 mortgage on it. You go to the bank and you say, hey, I want to do a home equity line of credit. Okay, 90% loan to value, let's just say. So that $150,000 house, okay, you can pull out of that, let's see, $150,000, $10,000, $15,000, $135,000 in equity. So now you pull it out, but you got to pay off that first mortgage at $20,000. Let's just say you have a $20,000 mortgage. Now you got $115,000. And they're not going to hand you the $115,000. They're going to give you a checkbook. So it's there for you, and you can write the check at any time and engage that loan. You don't have to take the loan out, have the money in your hands and go, oh, great, now what do? Now I've got to start paying a monthly mortgage payment back. You don't have to do that. With the home equity line of credit, it doesn't get started until after you actually write a check for whatever it is that you want to buy. They're lovely. So, you want to buy a HUD home? Go get a home equity line of credit on your house. Okay? And home equity lines of credit are running somewhere around what?
3.74% on personal.
Okay.
Top tier one credit.
3.74% for personal. I have one on this building and I pay 5.25%, is it? 5.25%. Yeah, considering commercial? I don't live here. You know? 50 cents on the dollar was a 50% loan to value. So I couldn't get 90% loan to value. Couldn't pull but 50 cents on the dollar out. No, it's fine with me.
Is that a local bank?
Fulton Savings Bank. Yeah. And my one at home is about 4%. 4%. Cash out the equity and refinance an investment property. At the conclusion, I told you, of our seminar, I have something here in my hands that may change your life forever. And what that is that I'm going to give you something of someone who does the cash out, the equity, and refinance an investment property. What does that mean? It means you don't live in it. Maybe you have a commercial building. Maybe you have a second home. Maybe you have a three-family house, a four-family house, a single-family house that you don't live in. You can pull equity out. And I'll go over that at the conclusion, okay? Credit cards. If I remember correctly, I believe I do have... Do I have that up on my website? A lady came in, Nikki Fowler, and she spoke on how she bought homes with credit cards.
I did it.
What's that?
I did it.
You did it? Camilla says she did it. Was it hard?
No.
Did you have to play kind of a little bit of a like a balancing act by going back and forth with them, trying to pay one off and get that one going and get? Yeah, there's a little bit of logistical dance that you have to do with them, but it's possible. How much were you able to pull out of the credit cards?
Well, actually, I had the checks.
Okay, the checks that come with the credit cards. And could you just would you mind sharing how much you were able to pull out? Because this is going to give people.
Well, I was working in corporate at the time, so I had high balances. And I had checks with them. I wrote the checks, put a down payment. I wrote the checks to do all the transactions for the attorney and everything. One check was 30, the other one was 25. I bought a house right here in Syracuse, I'm proud to say. I spent $30,000, and it was from my credit card. Wow.
So you had high balances or the ability to pull quite a bit out. So when she, Camilla said that when she got the checks, she was able to pull out, on one credit card was it?
$25,000.
So if you play your cards right, you have good credit. Good credit score. Okay? And you build a relationship with the bank. Was the credit card an older credit card, meaning you had it for a while?
I had it for a long time.
Long time.
I started going to college, so they was old.
Ooh, this was like decades old almost.
The black cards and, you know.
Did I say decades?
Yeah, sometimes.
Decade old. Sorry, Camilla, I meant decade old. Maybe a decade old. Few years old.
But then I had a very good job.
Yeah.
I had a lot of company cards as well.
Yeah.
The company's name, which I'm not going to say.
Sure.
They were well known in the industry.
Okay.
So if you used the card and you had the check, that alone in itself, when you send it to the bank, gave you a little clout.
Okay. Excellent. Carol.
Sometimes they'll offer you 0% interest.
Yes. Yes. 0% interest. You can play the game of going, you know, transferring, and sometimes for 3-4%, you can transfer your balances for zero. And just watch out. Just like with anything else, you've got to be on top of things, and you've got to be strategic about it, and you've got to be deliberate about it. You got to figure it out, and you can't be lazy, because if you do, look, it's just like the casino. They stack the deck in the credit card industry so that it favors them at all times. All right? Credit cards, it's very possible. Okay, number 15. We're on 15. This is a little known fact that the mortgage people out there know that you can do this, but they never tell you you can do this. It's not a conspiracy. They're not holding anything back. You buy a home with FHA financing. I'm talking about a single family home with 3% down, you know, 6% seller concession. I mean, you can get into a $100,000 home with $4,500 worth of taxes for $6,000 with a seller concession of 6% or $6,000 of your closing costs paid. You can get into it like that. So for $6,000 total, you can get into a $100,000 home. You keep it and then move on to another home, but you got to have a good reason, okay? Reason could be you bought a 2-bedroom home and your family's expanding. So now you go and you buy yourself a 3- or 4-bedroom home with conventional financing. We're talking single family again now, okay? Talking owner-occupant. And you get the conventional financing with 5% down, 3% seller concessions. So in the same given scenario, let's just say you buy another $100,000 home, you're going to need about $11,000 to get into this one. But what would it cost to buy a $100,000 home with 25% down? Yeah, 40. Right. And then the home that you bought with the 3.5%, the first one, what do you do with it? You rent it out. You can do this. They don't tell you you can do this, but you can do this. You can buy two homes. Now, there is one other way of doing this. This way is even easier because you've got options. You buy a 2-family house or a condo or a townhome. You live in it for about a year. You buy with FHA financing, just like we said before. Then you go and you step up to a single-family home. You don't even need to have a family that's larger. I don't think you do, at least.
You can have two FHAs out at the same time?
Yes, you can. And you can buy your second home, a single family, with FHA with 3.5% down. If it doesn't work, you just go to conventional. But you buy your first home with FHA. That's the important thing. Don't buy with conventional, then go to FHA. Buy it with FHA, then go to conventional. Or if it's a 2-family home and you're going to a single family, you're stepping up from a condo, townhome, or 2-family home to a single family home, you can buy it with 3.5% FHA with 6% seller concession. You only have to come up with $6,000 again for your second home. And now, what's the catch? The catch is the 2-family house that you bought originally, make sure you buy it at a bargain, maybe a HUD home. Because in order to be able to purchase your next home a year later, you have to have 25% equity in your 2-family house. They will order 2 appraisals. One for the one that you're buying, one for the one that you're living in right now, to make sure that there's 25% equity. What that means is that if it's worth $100,000 and you were able to snatch it for $75,000, you have 25% equity. And you can do this.
I have a question for you.
Sure.
So just for instance, let's say I buy a home, a 2-family home, FHA.
Yep.
Okay. So I get it 3 years later, I refinance it to the bank. Put it in the company's name.
Okay.
So now I'm free and clear from an FHA. I can go back and use another FHA, can't I?
After 3 years. Beautiful. It's either 2 or 3 years. You're a first-time home buyer every 3 years. Double-check with the bank as far as see if there's any more stipulations other than 3 years. It's typically 3 years. Anytime you hear the word first-time home buyer, by the way, there's not really a whole lot of opportunity for first-time home buyers. There's more perception in the people's minds as far as opportunity than there really is. Okay. I will give you a little bonus tip. If you are a first-time home buyer and you're going to be buying a single-family house for you to live in, or even a 2-family, I think they allow 2-family, you can go to Empower Credit Union and you can sign up for their buyer assistance program. I'm not sure the name of it.
Yeah.
It's 10 months long. And once you...
24 months.
I'm sorry?
10 to 24 months.
10 to 24 months.
$4 for each dollar that you put down.
So right.
And they actually, right now, I just saw because I went through the bank, they have a seminar about that.
Okay.
Power head that I need.
And you can walk away with $7,500 of their money in order to put down on the house. takes, like I say, like Claire was saying, a minimum of 10 months. Yeah. I know several people have done it. It's a great deal. Nobody else is doing anything like that. Carol?
FHA, does the home have to pass inspection to be able to get the loan?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Home has to have a minimal condition, which means no holes in the wall, no peeling paint. Okay? It means no soiled carpets. It means no missing carpets.
So what's the name of the program? Was Empire?
Empower Federal Credit Union.
Empower
Federal Credit Union has a first-time buyers program where it's a contributory.
Okay.
They put you through these classes, I believe, too.
Cooperative Credit Union has it as well.
Which one?
Cooperative Credit Union.
Okay, Claire's bringing up to a point, and now here's what I'm going to kind of retranslate what she's saying. Go check your credit unions out, because they may have those programs in the one that you're currently invested in. Mm-hmm. Number 17, our final way of funding your home. Now let me give you a little background on this one. Tom House, unfortunately, who's not here tonight, Tom has the distinction of not only being number 100 on the Wall of Fame out there, but he's also was sitting in this room a few years ago, and I shared a method of getting money in order to be able to fund your real estate, and it just happened to be one that he could do. And one that he hadn't even thought of. And can I be a little bit heady?
Yeah.
He used to work for Robert Kiyosaki. And he just came to one of these. See, you never know where you're going to get the information. You know, and I'll back that headiness down just a little bit and say that it could have been at the Kiyosaki, but he heard it here. Okay? And this is what he heard. He heard that you could borrow from your whole life insurance policy. He had been paying into a life insurance policy for 50 years, and he did not remember or know or understand that you could borrow off of your whole life insurance policy. Changed his world. It rocked his world. He went from owning 3 or 4 properties, now he's at 25. What it did was it infused capital so that he could get going. And truthfully, I guess the tipping point of being able to even get more money is 10 properties. Kind of a different part of a different seminar, but I just want to, because sometimes in your mind it's like, well, when does this get easier? When is it easier to get money, you know? I know that you can only have 4 loans, sometimes 10, depending on the bank, you know, because if you have more than 4 loans, they don't want to give you another loan. There are some places where they'll do wraparound mortgages, and I'm going to give you something in just a second where this will magically change your life forever, okay? And those of you who are listening to this, what I'm about to pass out is a special type of line of credit, and I'll go over it in just a second, and if you want the sheet, just email me john@adolfi.com, or just hit reply when you get this email, and sharing with this information, and I'll send you the worksheet, okay? So, borrow from your whole life insurance policy. Change his life. And you can do it too. All you got to do is inquire. So just contact your life insurance, whoever's doing your life insurance. Can't be used for term life insurance. It's got to be whole life. Whole life's the expensive stuff. But you can borrow off of it. Okay.
Yeah, I even have one more that I have had. Personal loans.
Oh, we didn't even cover personal loans.
I've helped.
Has anybody gotten a personal loan since 1979? You just don't hear about anybody getting personal loans anymore, you know?
I've two of them, and I've used them to bridge the gap. I've taken some from 457B loan.
Okay.
My retirement, and I've taken some from that. Then a personal loan, grouped it together, and been able to do the deal. Now you're paying 99%.
Okay.
You know, see, you got to pay it back quick, but...
All right, well, Brian is saying that he was able to... Brian, would you mind me asking how much you were able to pull out as a personal loan? Would you?
The first time I did, I think it was $12,000.
$12,000 at 9.9%?
9.9%.
Okay.
And the second one was $15,000.
$15,000 the second time.
It's like hard money, but it's cheaper.
It's like a hard money loan, but cheaper.
It's cheaper.
I like that.
And it's unsecured.
All right.
And you can get it...
It's unsecured loan. Yeah. Yes, Camilla.
I also did a deal where I borrowed from a friend of mine 401k to buy real estate.
Camilla's saying that she borrowed off of somebody else's 401k. Camilla, can I borrow off of your 401k? We'd be okay.
I borrowed from a friend of mine 401k.
Wow.
And
did they charge you interest?
That she charged me small interest. But what how the deal was, like, I did all the paperwork, right? She had it through Equity Trust.
Yeah.
And I did a loan through a 401k. I did all the paperwork. She got all the paperwork for me. The loan came to me. The money came to me. And when I bought the house, and then after I refinanced the house, and I took the money back, and I paid her back, and she charged 4% interest on
it. Oh, sure.
You got
another?
Camilla.
You look like a dirt cell second half.
All right, I'm going to pass these out. There you go. All right. Now, what I'm about, and again, just email me if you'd like to get this thing. Just ask me, John. Send me your report on. Not report. Just send me the sheet on the line of credit. Just say line of credit. Hit reply and I'll send this to you. All right. So it's available for 1 to 4 family, non-owner occupant, 5+ units in all commercial properties. How's that for a spread? Okay. Must be in first position. It's okay to take the equity and pay off the existing loans and liens, which is typical. Loan sizes are from $25,000 to $1.2 million. Blanket mortgages. It's allowable. It covers multiple properties of equity. Yeah. All commercial property types considered. Properties can be of the same, can be in the name of an LLC, corporation, or personal name. First time or new investors, okay. Rental income from subject property can be used in cash flow to determine gross income. That's cool. Borrower can also can own an unlimited number of properties to be considered. Up to 75% loan to value. We're talking non-owner occupant. Interest rates as low as prime plus 1.5, and I think prime is what, 3.25. Okay, so as low as 4.75%. Term is 20 years, 5-year draw period, payment calculated during 5-year draw by taking one. Anyway, we'll skip over that. Lending area from Buffalo to Syracuse. No bank deposit relationship required, but available if desired. It's a line of credit. Out-of-state borrowers welcome.
All right.
Contact Peter Bostwick, and there's his number. And those of you listening to this, 426-1601. I'll repeat it again. 426-1601. Blackthorn Funding. Give Peter a call.
I love this.
All right, we're going to go ahead and end tonight. We're going to have a little Q&A after we get done here. But thank you for listening tonight, and you folks have a wonderful, wonderful afternoon, evening, morning, whenever you're listening to this.
Thank you.